Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello, I'm Michael Chakraborty.
And I'm Mark Watson.
And welcome back to Menkind, where we chat to a range of brilliant guests about masculinity.
Some of them are men, some of them aren't men, and some of them aren't particularly bothered either way.
We're interested in men.
Yes, obviously you are.
And what makes them tick? Where does masculinity come from? How does it affect us? And how could we be better?
We might not get a final answer, but we'll have a bloody good go at it. Won't we, Michael?
Oh, we'll do our best.
Hello, welcome to another week. It's Mark Watson here, the nation's sweetheart. But I'm afraid there is no trace of Michael Chakraborty. He's actually Michael Chakraborty at the moment. It doesn't quite work, but basically he's got tonsillitis, so his throat hurts. If this sounds a little bit mischievous of me, of course, I have all the sympathy in the world for Michael. He's made it perfectly clear, both on social media and in our WhatsApp group, how much sympathy he would like. So please tweet Michael or use whatever channels you can to contact him and send him your love and good wishes. Nonetheless, another episode is presented to you. This was recorded in the period when Michael was still alive and well. And the guest is someone that I'm very proud to be offering up to your ears this week. He was a colleague of mine on the cursed show, The Celebrity Island with Bear Grylls, a man whose intelligence and way of looking at the world I found very stimulating throughout that period. A person who has an enormous range of interests. He's an artist of various kinds, has been a very famous recording star, has also been in an extremely famous film franchise, as will come up, is deserving of the title Polymath. And for a long, long time, I've been trying to get him to do this podcast, but among his talents is not speedy replies to text messages. Nonetheless, I eventually wrestled him to the ground, and I hope you enjoy listening to your friend of mine, well, certainly mine, Jordan Stevens. Hi, everyone. This is Mark Watson, as so often happens. By my side virtually is my old friend Michael Chakraborty, and we are joined today by Jordan Stevens. Hi, Jordan.
Hello.
Hi, mate.
That was very tender. That was nice.
It was tender. Yeah. Jordan is actually a very loving guy. He and I know each other from the notorious survival show, The Celebrity Island with Bear Grylls, which I've banged on about quite a bit in public. But it's been a varied career for you, Jordan. Mm. Would you like to say roughly who you are, some of what you've done?
Okay, my name's Jordan Stevens, and most well-known, I'd say, for being half of Rizzle Kicks. Then since we decided to maybe step away from being pop stars, I mean, notably, I popped up in a Star Wars film, which is pretty fucking cool.
That is pretty cool.
I act generally. I didn't just like run onto the set of Star Wars.
Yeah, when you say you popped up on it, you're not doing yourself enough justice there. You were actually invited to be in the film.
Yeah, I had fucking lines. I was part of the Rebel Alliance that saved the galaxy, but we'll talk about that another time.
That was really appreciated. Yeah, yeah.
People should thank me every day because...
Of course they should. That's a galaxy.
We'd be under Sith rule, and I don't think people understand how... Actually, we kind of are. I mean, that's a whole other conversation. So that, and then a mental health campaign called I Am Whole, which is 5 years old now. We took the gas off a little bit this year, but we have many plans for the coming year, which is great. Centered more around male audiences, so that's cool and in keeping with your podcast. Yeah, and then other than that, man, I don't know. I'm just like trying to, I've been doing bits of writing. I'm really falling in love with writing. I've got little book deals here and there that are yet to blossom and don't really want to say much until they do, you know, because it's like, yeah.
Yeah, and I think you've said enough in terms of making us feel small about our own achievements.
Shut up.
You've racked up enough points there.
Well, you told me I fucking know. Like,
we did tell you to.
I do think you should lead with the defeating the Sith thing, though. I think that's top of the list, really, isn't it?
Jordan was, I think, the first person I ever met who'd been in any sort of a Star Wars film. It was something we chatted about quite early on.
I will say that I will never include the island in my list of achievements.
Yeah, I don't think I do either. It's more a sort of list of things you've been through in life, isn't it? It's more something you talk about in therapy than on a CV, I think.
The actual experience of it and the people I've met like yourself, yeah, fantastic.
Mostly me, yeah.
The fact that I have that to recall is a blessing, but every other part of it sometimes makes me want to, you know, kick a small animal.
Yeah, which actually didn't do us much good on the island because there were hardly any of them around. And the ones that were there, we had to try and eat.
Also, I feel already regret. I would never kick a small animal. I'd rather kick an executive producer in the face.
Yeah, yeah. It's very out of character. You came across as a very gentle person throughout the island, which in fact...
Did either of you kill anything on the island?
Well...
Crabs.
Only crabs?
Loads of crabs.
Yeah, there weren't many creatures available and we were a couple of weeks short of the point where we were able to kill each other or had to kill each other and eat each other. Right. So we sort of got away without too much murdering. But actually, this is a masculinity related strand of conversation because in that environment there was quite a lot of macho behavior inevitably because some people felt like the only way we can do this is to win and you know we've got to beat this island. I think Jordan and I were notable for not being on that end of the spectrum basically. We were slightly bemused by some of the more traditional male behavior. Is that fair, Jordan?
I'd say so. Not necessarily how it was edited, no. But like I think between you and I, yeah, definitely. I remember us just constantly campaigning for Sarah to be like camp leader, I think, right?
Yeah, it dawned on us quite early that the women on the whole were better at getting things done just because they were better at listening and polling opinion.
I mean, yeah, I would like to say I was on that side, but I would also hold my hands up to be like, I did my desire to source water so rapidly. I remember on that island was hilarious. I just walked into like an infinite green abyss of jungle and got taught a lesson so swiftly about our insignificance in the greater scheme of nature. It was terrifying. My logic was that I saw a particularly green tree, so that must be where the water is.
Right. I remember you saying that over and over again for hours. Yeah, look how green it is, man. Which, to be fair, it did sort of make sense, yeah.
I mean, it did, but then I also almost died, so like...
Yeah. Before we move off the island, which we shouldn't focus on too much, I will say that Jordan decided to leave about halfway through, and I spent quite a bit of time trying to persuade him to stay because he was one of my favourite people to hang out with. And hanging out is being quite generous. By that, I mean sitting, shuddering on a beach.
Starving.
Yeah. And one time when Jordan had sort of already made his decision, he said, I just don't really see what the point of this is. And I said, well, we must be learning things about, I don't know, ourselves or how to look after ourselves in life, how to survive. And Jordan said, and this comes back to me a lot in life's struggles. He said, yeah, but the thing is, if we were here in a real life situation, I'd just go. The way I'd survive this would be to not be here anymore. So surely that's survival. And we talked about it, and it's sort of true. The more we deconstructed it, he was like, if this was a real survival show, we'd just get someone to pick us up and go for dinner somewhere. At that point, I started thinking he's right, but I'm not sure he's cut out for this genre of television. But I often think about that. Anytime I'm in a sort of what seems like a challenge which has been unfairly put on me, I think of you saying that and think, why am I even doing this? Why don't I just phone someone to fuck this off?
But I think if I did it again now, I would be a lot calmer. In myself, yeah. Generally, I was just very busy as a human anyway. Not busy as in my schedule, just internally, I think.
Yeah, would you say you're less like that since then? Because at the time, you talked about having ADHD and stuff like that, and your brain was certainly a fascinating place. You'd always be talking about the constellations. You'd point up and describe the patterns of the stars and stuff that I didn't know about. But then as I was asking a follow-up question, you'd change the subject to porridge or something. And then you'd start talking about Ant and Dec. So, you know, you were quite hard to pin down mentally at that stage. Would you say you've found more... in a piece since then?
Yeah, definitely, man. I've gone through so much since then that has informed my energy and definitely my ability to just sit still, you know? Like even conceptually thinking about that length of time alone feels different to how it was. Felt like an Everest before, you know? The idea of that on an island a month, you know?
Yeah.
Now to think about it, I would understand. I mean, obviously I've experienced it to an extent, so I know what's ahead of me, but I think I'd certainly be better at just being still, I think.
Yeah. Michael, we ought to ask Jordan the traditional opening questions.
Right, let's get cracking with our first question, which is quite a simple one, really. What do you think of when you think of masculinity?
I think of, well, now just in my head, then I thought of like a big anchor in the ground.
Ah, that's quite a metaphor of an answer, but generally we get strong.
This is how he talks, Michael. He talks in riddles.
He's like a poem.
Yeah.
What do you mean? Where does that come from?
Because I think dissecting or thinking of masculinity, I've thought about excessively for maybe 5 years at least. In the last couple of years, I've definitely lent towards finding in myself the most, I'm trying to think of another word other than divine, but I mean, that's the word that kind of gets thrown around to mean the truest, purest form of the energy, you know, like divine feminine or divine masculine. And I've been trying to access that in myself just to help myself and to grow as a person, mature. And when I've spoken to various kind of elders or people who talk about ancient beliefs around masculinity, they always talk about this sense of being grounded, kind of stillness, which I think has now become a little bit, it's been thrown around a little bit in our modern Western society.
Yeah, it's over-familiar as an idea.
Yeah, like the stoicism is now at a toxic point, I'd say, or it can be looked at as actually a non-beneficial process to just bear with it. But it's not that, I don't think. It's just being a place of strength and the almost decisiveness. What I see is that image, and that's what I think of, whether that's a man or a woman. I definitely think of that energy as being a kind of anchor.
It's a kind of a positive anchor rather than one weighing you down, would you say?
Yeah, definitely a positive thing. I spoke to a friend who has all this knowledge about ancient civilizations, I suppose, or I don't know, I think he was coming from an Aboriginal background, but he was speaking about even Ayurvedic teachings and stuff and how loads of ideas have essentially come from the same principles, but then they've been morphed over time because of various cultural nuances and shit. He says that historically, from what he knows, masculinity was considered the still rocks and femininity was considered this expression of fire, you know, this kind of like big, and it was those two energies together that would maintain this kind of balance. So I'm assuming that was something that would need to be present in everybody to an extent. He constantly referenced pictures of Shiva, I think, the Hindu god.
Yeah.
And he would have Kala, I think, the goddess of war or something. She would be above him and he would be below her. And he said that for him, that represented that kind of grounding underneath the fire. Yeah,
interesting, isn't it? Because we've not just drifted quite a long way from those ideas, but in some ways sort of inverted them. Like, there's a feeling in the society we live in that men are about the big gesture and, you know, action and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And for quite a long time we've expected women to be sort of still and passive and hold the fort for men's actions and emotions.
Completely, I agree. Yeah,
I mean, you always seemed an interesting example of a man to me on the island. Admittedly, quite weird circumstances to get to know someone. But it felt to me like you have quite a good combination of those things. Like, you are kind of, compared with me, physically robust and strong and like rugged and manly in those ways. But you did also have this kind of peace and stillness, even though you were at the time quite mentally agitated.
Yeah.
Are you conscious of trying to bring together the masculine and the feminine in your own sort of personality, your own actions?
Yeah, I think actually at the time of the island, I'd say, I don't believe I was as in touch with my masculine side as I perhaps needed to be. Just if I'm comparing it to now, you know, I think I grew up around a lot of strong women and I've always found it easier to hang out with women, get along with women. And I'm saying this because naturally there'd be a lot of femininity there. Although actually my mum's quite an interesting balance of the two and actually almost warped my perception of women because she kind of balanced masculinity and femininity so impressively. You know, she'd scream at the telly when Arsenal were fucking losing, you know, and I thought that was the kind of usual vibe for any man or woman. And then swiftly learned that there's this idea that girls aren't as into football, which baffled me when I was older because I was like, you know, my mum was always the biggest fan.
Yeah, if you don't grow up with that idea, then there's no reason why you should think it. It's just most of us do, I suppose.
Yeah, literally, I had to learn.
Your mum will have done quite a bit of screaming over the past couple of years.
But she's given up. She's literally gone past. She's beyond screaming. Anyway, I just think, yeah, I don't know, man. I think I needed to tap into that energy of my own self-protection, you know. I think even still around the island those years, it was about 4 or 5 months after the island, I actually had the worst breakdown of my life, actually. And was because I was unable to just be angry about shit. I was unable to truly be healthily angry and protective of myself and my needs. And in not tapping into that energy, I was damaging to people around me as well, which is, again, maybe in contrast to how things are spoken about. I actually think it was a lack of my understanding of masculinity that led to me damaging myself and others, or the more warped idea of what masculinity is.
I think it's really interesting because, yeah, time and time again on this podcast, we hear about more traditional toxic masculine behavior, like basically too much anger, too much of a failure to suppress emotion, you know, like, and so things like anger, stress that are taken out on other people. But what you're talking about is almost the opposite problem.
Yeah.
Being so restrained about your masculinity that it became a weapon in its own right.
Well, I mean, look, it's up for debate whether or not masculinity and femininity as terms are to a degree subjective. And
you're right, actually. It's wrong to talk about all.
Yeah, it's fluid and who fucking knows, you know what I mean? But I definitely believe in balance. I definitely believe in duality. So there'll be some, you know, there'll be a plus and a minus or whatever the fuck. I mean, already those have other ideas attached to them. But you know what I'm trying to say? There's two sides.
Yeah,
for sure.
Where did you find the way to kind of express that masculinity, that anger?
Well, I went through a quite extensive amount of therapy and I got sober and I did an amazing emotional trauma retreat called The Bridge. All things I was very lucky to do because of, I suppose, access and time. And I did a lot of reading, a lot of audiobooks, an amazing documentary called The Work. This kind of stuff, all building towards what I've been trying to build, and I think what everyone's wanting to build, is this kind of inner core, you know, this kind of solid inner core that it's just almost a conversation with self, which is that I will support you even if things are tough. Just you talking to yourself or me talking to myself. It's just knowing that there will be the belief in the self that there will be love shared. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I don't think I had that for a long time. I think even though I was definitely open-minded, I've always been open-minded, always been interested in feminism, always been the man willing to go against the grain. I think a lot of the binary notions of masculinity are kind of stupid. I don't really, well, stupid is the wrong word, but I don't necessarily agree. In that respect, yeah, I've definitely always held that position as an outlier or someone willing to challenge ideas. But I think for myself, I've actually tapped into it from therapy, being okay with saying I am angry. Knowing that therapy was a safe space for me to express the fact that I was angry. And I'm not talking about rage. That's what I think people might think of in terms of kind of masculinity and anger is rage, you know, just fighting people. Mm. That's not what anger is.
Demonstrative anger.
Anger isn't that.
Yeah.
I think everybody, I think this country actually has a real problem with anger, actually. As a society, we are taught to not be angry. We're taught that it's unbecoming to be angry, whether you're a man or a woman, you know. It's all about restraint, stiff upper lip bullshit.
Where do you think that connection between anger and rage has come from?
People who don't deal with anger healthily, it becomes rage. Right. It's like a jack in a box. You know what I mean? Mm. If you don't understand how to process anger as it comes, then it bursts.
It will warp into rage given time.
Oh, mate, I still struggle with this stuff now because we tell ourselves that we haven't got a right to feel angry. We'll think our way out of believing that it happens. Mm. And it can be tiny things. Do you know what I mean? It can be just interacting with London, mate. There's like four reasons to be angry after I've walked about 100 metres out of my house. You know what I'm saying? Just from the abuse of the city.
Yeah, London's a pretty easy place to get angry, it's fair to say. And there's a lot to deal with on a minute-by-minute basis sometimes, which you don't.
Right. And that energy, you know, we need to be doing things to express that, you know, exercise and being able to talk, being able to outlet that, breathing, stuff like that, you know. So now if I feel angry about something, not only am I aware that I feel angry, I have steps I can take to deal with that anger. I'm still not great at picking up on it straight away. I can still sometimes convince myself I'm not angry. But basically the root of all of my turmoil and my toxic behavior, I believe so far and what I've learned about myself, stems from me suppressing anger at a young age.
Right.
And taking it out on myself. And in doing so, hurting other people, you know, because if I was in a relationship and I'd go out and do a shit ton of cocaine and drink loads and fuck about and be an idiot, I've got a responsibility to people more than just myself.
Yeah.
And that's where that behavior would then become. But ultimately, I'm just hurting myself.
When we were on the island, you were starting to play with some of these ideas and think about it in a fuller way. Like you just started the campaign we mentioned, I Am Whole. So even though you weren't necessarily in the greatest place yourself, you already were starting to think about what you could do to influence other people's mental health and their relationship with it. You got me involved briefly, you know, in recording a video and stuff like that. So we talked about it quite a bit. What was it that made you sort of think about doing something specifically about male or skewed towards male mental health?
It's literally just because the most interaction we've had with that mental health charity is from young girls and women. And I personally think that there are many reasons for that. And, you know, everything's coded, you know. So sometimes I sit down with the team and talk about the colors that we're using, and by that I don't mean everything has to be like scarlet red and angry. I just mean in terms of sometimes shapes can mean a lot to a person, or their general ideas around the tone of something.
Can you tell us a bit about the campaign I Am Whole?
I Am Whole was initially a mental health campaign that was supposed to be a tiny little thing in Brighton and Hove, trying to destigmatize the way people spoke about mental health. And this was about 5 or 6 years ago. The conversation was very different then. Mm. And it blew up. Now it's become something a lot bigger. And we are putting money into grassroots kind of organizations. We did a mental health gig to raise money and then had some amazing artists perform. And we started a digital detox day, which we've launched with Zoe Sugg. But yeah, at the start I said about heading more towards men because I think it's important for men to feel that they feel included in that conversation.
You said the conversation changed in the past few years. What do you think's changed? It certainly feels as if people are talking about male mental health a lot more than they were even 4 years ago.
Yeah, definitely. I get asked sometimes what the next step is with I Am Whole. And for me, I think awareness has been great. We've done a lot of awareness raising. People can now utilize these terms either to communicate how they're feeling or to try and understand how they're feeling, which is amazing. But now I really want to step into a space of people understanding what steps can be taken to better themselves and to be able to deal with these things themselves at first, at least. if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then from that, you know, a greater community and a society that generally understands how these things work. But I'm really into the relationship between body and mind right now, you know. I would really like, yeah, to include men, because I just think there needs to be some more noise in that space. I think men need just a bit of guidance.
Why do you think there's a reluctance from men to talk about mental health?
Because it shows weakness, I think.
Right.
I think there's a lot of expectation placed on men, on everyone, of course. But I think there's this age-old complex of being a provider and also meeting these bizarre capitalist standards of existence that seem to orientate around material elevation, which are just pointless, mean nothing to the soul, mean nothing to emotional resilience.
It's true that a lot of the male heroes that we see set up by Sati do match a certain very specific late capitalist model of success, as you say, material attainment, yeah, and also just like measurable success, either in money or status, or those are all still things that men have got to cut through to be happy.
Jordan, how do you square that with your time in Rizzlekicks? Must have been quite a heightened time of all those things. At the time, how did you experience that? And kind of also looking at it now, how do you feel about that?
Oh, I mean, when Rizzlekicks popped off, I was all engines on go. I wanted all the toxicity. Yeah, I wanted it all. I wanted a big, big bath of toxic. I was completely... You know what's so fascinating about that for me, which I think about a lot because I've been writing about this stuff recently, is that one big source of fuel for me in that time was the sense of inadequacy that I felt as a teenager. And I find that so fascinating because it's all about power, right? So I remember particularly at my secondary school in the earlier years, so from year 7 to maybe year 9, the girls at the school were like top of this shit. They could destroy you, these girls at the school, you know, and they were like, all their hormones had kicked in fucking early. Our school, I think comparatively from conversations I had with people, was like seriously raunchy, way earlier than it should have been. And, you know, you'd be kind of accosted by these girls. Honestly, I remember being bullied into a relationship when I was in year 8, like genuinely bullied into a relationship by a group of girls, you know, forced to kiss this girl, like all this kind of wild shit. And then I remember my hormones kicked in near the end of year 8. I kind of hit puberty quite late. And I was doing this catch up. I was wanting to snog all these girls and have sex with all these girls, you know, when I was like 15 and wanting them to desire me desperately. And but them kind of going off with a boy who would hit puberty really early and had like fucking big arms or sold drugs or whatever it was.
Yeah, there were always people ahead of you by that point.
Yeah. And because that was your entire universe at that point. Though. That's what's so crazy. Is all of that stuff was on a magnifying glass. Those kind of thoughts and feelings would seem to us now as adults, you know, yeah, sure, part of life, but there's other things to focus on. In school, it's like, that is everything. If I've asked this girl out and she's looked me in the face and said, I'm going out with this boy instead, like that would completely form my day.
It's life altering.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
So when you find yourself a sort of high status pop star, you said this a bit to me when we were chatting those years ago.
Yeah.
It felt like sort of a riposte to your own younger self or something, like making up ground that you'd lost.
Well, I had done it. I found myself an outsider by the end of my secondary school years. I was just a bit of odd, you know. I had like a couple of friends, but I was at home working, right? And I was working as in I was teaching myself how to make MySpaces and design websites, and that's actually how I got my break, which is a whole other story. But I was putting everything into it and I was getting fucking wrenched. I mean, like all these other boys, these cool kids or whatever, they were like off of their girlfriends or doing whatever the fuck at these parties, and I was kind of in those circles but not so much. And other rappers in Brighton at the time were rinsing me because I was rapping about weird shit. I was just on some other vibe, man. I was just like wanting to rap about something else. And anyway, so when it works, yeah, when like, when can I get that shit? When I'm in the fucking charts and shit and I'm getting given money.
Yeah.
I remember getting a message from this girl once and just looking at a picture of her and being like, what the fuck, man? Like, this girl is so hot, you know? And that baffling me, and then me desperately needing that validation from that experience in order to understand who I am.
But it all came from a sense that you've missed out on stuff before, right? That you've been isolated.
Yeah, it all came...
It's that thing of the best form of revenge is success. It's that sort of thing, isn't it?
Literally. Yeah. It's literally that, yeah. I remember the feeling because I saw one of the girls that I used to fancy when I was in school and kind of almost had a thing about she went off with these other boys. She was part of the girl group that would tease boys. You know, they'd spread rumours and shit. You know what I mean? You wouldn't want to get on their bad side.
Yeah,
I remember well.
Yeah. Right. I remember becoming famous and doing well and going back to Brighton and going on a night out and one of these girls coming over and being like, oh, what, so, yeah. I don't know, she was trying to like poke fun or belittle it a little bit, you know what I mean? Like, oh, what, so are you famous now, ever? And I remember being like, yeah, I am, yeah.
Yeah, I am, mate.
Yeah. And in that moment, I felt this exchange of power.
Yeah.
And at the time, I'd talk about that and be like, hey, how great is that? Now I think, How wild is that? How wild that these are the energies I was playing with. If I could go back to my younger self now, I'd be like, mate, focus solely on what you think you deserve. Don't be looking outside of what other people think of you and basing your idea of self on their approval or who's more powerful. That's fucked up, but that's what happened.
Do you think there's a way that we can tell young people that?
Listen, the power thing is a trip.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you guys have experienced it too. Like, I think there must be something chemically. Well, there is. There's a release of dopamine, I think, that occurs if there's some shift in status. I don't know what the fuck it is.
It's the same with Instagram and social media and all of that. It's the exact same thing, isn't it? It's validation and the power that comes from that.
Yeah, and young minds and, you know, seemingly we all want to acquire the sense of power. But the only thing I think of with that question is the lack of eldership and mentorship that we have in our communities and our societies, you know.
It's an idea that we've maybe lost a little bit.
Hugely. And rites of passage as well. Initiations.
Yeah.
I think they do that thing in America, don't they, with like fraternities, which I think is, again, based around probably quite an ancient principle, but it seems now to only be drinking and like having sex and stuff. They do that in like eating and shit, don't they? Like, there are kind of bizarre, again, mutations of that principle of initiation. But
that's right. The idea of mentorship is really valuable at its core. But as you say, it's been twisted into just like
bastardized.
Here is your drinking buddy from 2 years above and stuff like that.
None of that.
Yeah. At the core of it, there is something quite important. Seeing someone who's already been through some of the stuff that you are and being taken in hand by them, it does feel like something that we've gone away from out of a sort of embarrassment or something or ego.
Yeah, totally. Listen, when I got the record deal and went into the charts, 18, I was 19-ish. Everyone was just there for the party, you know, which is great. But
I was going to ask if there, because this is sort of in line with the question we often ask, have there been men that have either consciously or not served as mentors for you or role models, people to follow? Or has the whole point been that because of the weird path you've walked, you've had to sort of carve it out yourself?
Yeah. I will say off the bat, the question, if ungendered, would almost certainly be women who I looked up to or guided me more. But
and that wouldn't be the first time someone said that either, actually. Quite often the question does have to be turned on its head because it ends up being about strong female influences.
Both my granddads, for example, died before I was born, so I never met them. So I had a huge kind of paternal opportunity kind of taken away from me by time. So when I was growing up, I'm not sure if there were men I looked up to. I definitely had my pick of people I admired. Do you know what I mean? Like from a distance, knowing that it was a distance. When I was a kid, I loved Cisco. I mean, Ian Wright, I loved. I just always remember his smile and that celebration he did when he scored 187 goals, whatever it was. And because when I was a kid, I wanted to be a footballer. So footballers were who I looked to a lot.
He's someone who still inspires a lot of young people, actually, as time has gone on, I think.
Ian Wright, it's mad, isn't
it? We live in a strange time when footballers and ex-footballers have weirdly become figures of the public conscience, and Ian Wright's definitely a great example of that.
Yeah,
but they have a massive impact on lots of young people, particularly boys, I think it's probably worth saying, but women as well, and obviously young non-binary people. But it's fascinating how football has become these role models, often not willingly, I suppose. I mean, literally in the last couple of weeks, there's the first out gay professional footballer.
Oh yeah,
which is wild.
I've always said that that's so bizarre that that's never happened.
The impact that will have is groundbreaking, right, for all those young people looking up to them. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's massive.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at UH1.com.
Did you ever feel the pressure of being a role model?
Yeah, hugely. And I was so young with Rizzle Kicks and the stuff I was getting. I remember posting a status on Facebook asking if anyone had any acid when I was 22. And at the time, because I'm really smart, I had my full name and photograph on Facebook. and when I say full name, I mean Jordan in brackets Rizzle Stevens.
This is very different to the sort of thing I was putting on Facebook at the same time, which would be about having a cup of tea.
Yeah. I just really wanted to try some acid.
Yeah, but, fair play, yeah.
And then I got this, you know, phone call from our press office or whatever and was like, oh, they're going to run a story about it. And the journalist was actually quite nice. Mm. But he said to me, we've got to give a statement. Like, what do you want to give us a statement? And I was like, well, what do you want me to say? You know, I did ask for acid. I was like, actually, that's probably a great advert. Is that, yeah, that's what, yeah, I mean.
Has anyone got any? My question stands.
Yeah. Yeah. Thought that's so weird because I'm still 22, even though I'm in the public eye. But I understand that I had a responsibility because I was visible.
Yeah.
But I just think that's a lot to expect for somebody that young, especially now as nearing 30, to think back and expect that much. So yeah, of course I put dumb tweets. Of course I didn't know what the fuck was going on. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's... the expectation of youth in this society is fucking bizarre. In fact, the worshipping of youth is bizarre.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to hear from young people about shit.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to. People assume that someone at 20 or 21 is already the finished product. And if they become famous, then people hang an awful lot of stuff on them, which shouldn't be anywhere near.
Yeah.
And the retrospective expectations as well. When someone is announced to be doing something, people will trawl through their Twitter and find something from when they were 17. And it's like, well, of course they said dumb shit then.
Oh, yeah. Mate.
Like, of course.
Yeah, awful. Awful. I've got loads of shit. I've got loads of... like, even when I was growing up, homophobia was so prevalent in, like, the colloquialisms when we grow up, you know, we'd say gay.
Yeah.
And I'm not homophobic. I'm, in fact, an incredible lover of that whole scene in society and interact with it all the time and support it. I hope I'm considered an ally. And I grew up around gay men and women, you know, like with my godfather and godmothers and whatever else. That's my whole vibe. Mm. And still I use terms like that. It's all about cause and effect.
Yeah.
I mean, I am, and I call things gay. And I'm like, if we're going to slag someone else off for calling something gay, surely we have to look in our own house.
Do you know what I mean? It's fucked.
Yeah. Set an example, Michael.
Yeah, that's fucked, right? Right, well, there you are. That's it. And I would have had messages that would have reflected that. Because it's just idiocy. Because we're young. Mm. I mean, of course you can have an opinion when you're young, but you've got to contextualize it, you know?
Yeah.
This is a 21-year-old's opinion. Okay.
I suppose an overriding theme of nearly everything you said is that we put enormous pressure on ourselves and on each other, and we could all, like men and otherwise, we could all get better at understanding that and being a bit softer about it and a bit more rational, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, totally. I also want to quickly mention, just while on my mind, my unofficial uncle, Eamon Walker, when I was growing up, he was wonderful, positive male influence on me growing up alongside my dad. And also Tom Hines, who was a youth worker for Audio Active in Brighton. He was the first guy who encouraged me to go to a youth workshop and rap. He was also really important to me growing up because obviously that was the first time I'd ever been... that's what I mean about mentorship, actually. He was literally my mentor when I was a teenager at a youth centre. Two ideals that are still being attacked to this day, you know. Those organisations and those community-led things are so, so important to young minds. I can't emphasise that enough.
Yeah. Yeah, we need to fight to protect those.
100%. We need to make more of them. It should be like a fucking priority. Sorry, I didn't mean to diverge from what we were saying before. I just thought it was important to just quickly note that.
Well, I think all of these, the way your mind works is constantly diverging and fascinating, I think. But we probably do have to ask the traditional final question, Michael.
Yes, which kind of links a little bit to what you were just saying there. We ask our guests to think of three qualities they would build into a man. What would you build?
Of three qualities?
Yeah, if you were starting a man from scratch, or a person, I suppose.
Three qualities. I mean, resilience. Resilience comes to mind, but I suppose I'd want to say emotional resilience. Mm. Is that cheating to say that as a quality?
No, I don't think it is. No, I think that's literally answering the question.
Yeah, emotional resilience. The ability to surf emotional waves. I think that's what I think is missing, especially in a lot of men, is understanding that pain isn't forever, you know? So I think having a soul that understands that pain, like everything, is temporary, is would be cool. So yeah, emotional resilience. Great hugger.
Oh, that's a good one.
You want someone who's got a great hug, man. Sometimes I hug people and I'm like, fuck me, that was a good hug. I just feel buzzed after it.
Like... I agree. Underrated skill. It can change someone's day.
Oh, mate. Such a vibe. And apparently if you hug someone for like 10 seconds, you get happy. But I will suggest, obviously don't do that for people you don't know. You have to get someone's consent for that.
Quite a long time.
Yeah, the oxytocin is not always accessed if it's not somebody that consented to it.
Yeah. Don't just go and hug random people and go one, two, three.
No.
A great consensual hugger.
Great consensual hugger. And final thing. Do you know, it's so weird. I'm thinking in pictures. I can't, like, I'm trying to describe what I'm seeing in my head.
I've seen you do that before. I love it.
Yeah.
You often talk about circles and shapes and colours and things. I don't know many people whose brain works quite like yours, abstractly, but also...
I need to be able to say the words.
Well, yeah, it helps, but that's what we're here for.
It's something about... I'm stuck between two. Sorry, I know those rules. One is like I'm imagining
the rules aren't that harsh, to be fair.
Okay,
we'll give you four.
So I imagine someone laughing. You know that like the big communal laugh. It's just such an infectious laugh. Laughing again is a healing thing.
Yeah.
Someone who is able to not be taking everything so seriously. I actually have an issue of sometimes taking things too seriously. But then I also want a boundary. That's another important thing with a person. I really want that person to know their own boundaries. So that there's just clarity, constant clarity. I was listening to a podcast with Brené Brown. You guys know Brené Brown?
Yeah, brilliant. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she was saying that from her research on people, the current link between sense of peace, internal harmony, that all the people from all the different parts of the world that she'd been to, the link they all shared was razor sharp boundaries, you know?
Right.
Say something or do something that was just not in keeping with that person's specific boundaries, they just let you know. And then it's not that deep.
Yeah.
It's not about punishment. It's just like, no, it's just no. All it is no, or I don't want to. And then you know where you stand. Everyone's happy. You can have big, great consensual hugs and, you know, go swimming.
They're really lovely. Thank you so much, Jordan. And thank you for joining us this morning.
It's my pleasure. I feel like I should have asked you guys some more questions. Can I ask you guys some questions? Have you guys ever asked yourselves these questions in the podcast?
Michael interviewed me for one of the episodes and we're going to do it the other way around one time.
Okay, great.
But maybe we should work towards like a Christmas special or something where Jordan grills both of us gently.
I'm going to grill you, yeah. 10 seconds to tell me what you think of men now. Go.
It's been amazing chatting to you, mate. Again, it's been too long, really.
Yeah.
Oh, we should ask you, is there anything you'd like to plug? Where can people find you? Where can they find I Am Whole? All those things.
Yeah, I don't really have anything to plug. I'm always doing something. I'm always throwing something into the void. So just my name. Mm. I do have social media. Jordan F. Stevens, I think, is all of my social medias. But I struggle with it, man. I really struggle with... I feel like there's this battle we all have inside us now where like we intuitively are like, this doesn't make sense. And then the other side's like, but fun.
Yeah, Twitter. I love the comedy of Twitter, but then you get the rage of Twitter as well. And I've got a really good friend called Brenna who says something really smart, which I think about a lot, which is don't dance in the flames of fires other people set.
Yeah.
So
that's very nice.
That's amazing.
Isn't that lovely? Like, so if someone like J.K. Rowling is doing a transphobia yet again, she's setting a fire, let's not dance in those flames and let's instead help those people that are burning.
Yo, that is the realest. That's the realest thing, is saving your energy for the things, actions you can take to improve the situation.
Right,
exactly.
Or at least balancing it, because people got to be held accountable, but at least balancing it. I agree with that. It's so hard to differentiate between what's a genuine critique and what... Mm-hmm. There's going to be a diversity of thought and opinion. I think sometimes people... It's tough because some people have more influence than others, and I think that leads people to be angry or frustrated with the population. But
yeah, for sure.
They should all just listen. Nowadays, I'm just an existential nihilist anyway. My expectation of people is honestly so low. I don't think I can.
It saves you a lot of trouble, doesn't it?
Do you know what I mean? It's like, no, I expected that. Yeah, everyone's trash, and you know, I'll just go get on with life like that. Really,
nice place to end the podcast. Really,
it is. Well, see you next week. There you go. An extensive chat with Jordan Stevens, and do look for him on social media and so forth, although, as he says himself, he's slightly erratic about it, but well worth keeping an eye on, Jordan. Hope you agreed, hope you enjoyed the episode. A bit odd without Michael this, but I must press on, and actually, normally at this point, one previews the episode to come, but because of Michael's perilous state of health, it's not actually clear whether we are doing one, because, of course, tonsillitis does rob you of your ability to speak, which is a key podcast skill. And we don't know if Michael will rally sufficiently. So it might be that we have to have a break next week. We're still hopeful that we might not have to, but I do not have a next week guest to present to you. I'll just simply say that if we don't do one next Monday, don't panic. Mankind will be back, and perhaps an opportunity for you to catch up on one of the ones you haven't listened to, because I know you. You haven't listened to them all. You skipped it once or twice. You didn't get around to it. Most of you, you could do with a catch-up week. So, worst case scenario, do that next Monday. And we'll be back very shortly thereafter. We already have some great guests booked in for the next few weeks. If Michael were here, and sadly it's not just a big if, and an infinite if, because he's not, but if he were, he would at this point start urging you to give us nice reviews online, which many of you have been kind enough to do already, and also to follow us and get in touch with us as menkindpodcast@gmail.com, at menkindpodcast. He'd do a bit of that. Then he'd encourage you to come and see me on tour. I'd say something nice back about baking or something. Yeah, you can imagine how this could have been. As it is, we sit vigilant. We await news of Michael. Don't forget to send him a get well message. And we'll see you again as soon as we possibly can. Stay well.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.